Okay, so I'm not doing a review now of everything we've done in the first two parts, but if you take a look at your source sheet, you'll actually see at the end of the source sheet on the last page a set of review questions. I think at this point we have answered the first six out of the 11. So we've got 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 that are still to go. If you want to answer these review questions and email me your answers for me to check, I might look at them. I don't know. I can give a certificate of you passed the 11 question test, and then I can send you to Rabbi Bergman for the gift certificate. To Sips or to Pizza Cafe, and if you ask nicely, to Miriam's. Okay, so let's get started here, because we've got a lot to see. And I'm going to actually add the source sheet one more time to the chat, because I see Eric just joined, and I don't think he has it yet. Okay, source sheet is now again in the chat. Good. So our question is this: we've established that minhag mevatel halacha. The Yerushalmi says that minhag, popular practice, can override halacha. We gave three different views of what that line meant in the Yerushalmi. Two of them more or less diffused its importance, saying that either it doesn't mean minhag overrides halacha, means minhag overrides what one of the participants thought was going to happen in the transaction. So the employer thought, I'm paying them more money, I'm going to get them to do long hours. Doesn't work that way. Minhag overrides the assumption that he made. That's one way to read it. A second way to read it is that minhag overrides or really replaces hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya, such that normally we say if you want somebody to give you money, if you want somebody to provide you with something, you have to prove you have a right to it. However, minhag, local minhag, may take the place of that proof, may act as proof that you have a right to it. Both of those basically neutralize the power of minhag mevatel halacha. But then you have the view of Rabbeinu Yehonah's son in the Shita Mekubetzes in above Metzia Peizayin, who says no, minhag overrides actual halacha, so that when the pasuk in Tehillim tells me that workers' hours are X, local minhag can override it. Everything we say today is going to be based on that Rabbeinu Yehonah's son, and what we're going to ask is, why should minhag be able to do that? And we started discussing this at the very end last year, but I came up with a very different way to perceive this as I started going through everything and trying to organize it, and that's reflected in the way we're going to approach it today, so that nothing I said at the end about it last time was wrong, I think, or if it was wrong then, it's going to be wrong today also, but I think I'm going to organize it a little bit better. What I want to do is divide minhag into two different areas. The first type of minhag is commercial agreements between parties, where you have two specific individuals or groups who are working together. I suppose it could be more than two, and they make an arrangement between them, and minhag is binding when it comes to that arrangement. That's one way that's one type, and we have to ask why minhag works in those settings. And then the other is general issues, the power of minhag in anything you can come up with under the sun. They operate differently. So first we're going to talk about those commercial agreements and how minhag works, and we're going to see two different approaches, and then we'll shift gears to talk about the broader category of minhag, and we'll see two and a third approaches there. So an example of commercial agreements would be the case we dealt with in our Gemara, the case of employer-employee relations setting the hours of labor. The employer says, I am paying you, and the going rate is $50, and the employer says, I'm going to pay you $75, and doesn't say why. We discussed that already. And then later on, he says, well, I thought I was getting longer hours for that. And the answer is no. Local minhag is to do these hours. That's all we ever committed to do. Why is it that minhag will override his expectations? So the first approach is that, and this is what we saw at the end last time, there is a blanket tnai beis din. There is a blanket rabbinic statement that all minhagim are empowered automatically. That's the way life works. This seems to be the implication of the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi actually used the words Tanai Beisdin. There is a condition rabbinically when this was done. I have no idea, but it promotes minhag, and the mechanism for it is Hefker Beisdin. That's the idea. And we noted the Maharik, which I brought for you again in source Aleph. He was dealing with that Shabbos Bereishis case, in which the community had a practice of selling off the rights for the first Aliyah for Shabbos Bereishis, and if there's a Kohen, then he acquires it, or he forgives his honor and leaves Shul. And there was a Kohen there who said, no, I'm not interested in buying it, and I'm not interested in leaving Shul, and you have to call me up anyway. And the question is, what exactly is the power of this minhag? Could it override his claim on the first Aliyah? And the statement he makes, which I bolded here, Alma minog b'nei ha'ir docha is din chachmei ha'talmud. Minog is able to override the law set by the chachmei ha'talmud. And then he goes on to say, well, maybe not. It depends on which kind of minog you're talking about. And he says, the last line in Source Aleph, in the Ma'arik, Omnam zeh yesh ktas litchos v'lomar didavka gabe mamon hu de minog oker. Not so fast. When we say minog overrides things, that will mean specifically regarding financial matters. Why financial matters? Sherei hefker based in hefker hu. Because he says the way minhag is operating is the principle of hefker based in. The idea that based in is able to say, ha, you thought you owned that money? You don't own that money. Rabbi Bergman owns that money. Based in is able to do that. So that's exactly what we're talking about here, is minhag mevatel halacha. Minhag says, employer, you thought you had that money? No, you don't have that money. That money goes to the employees based on minhag. That's the hefker based in action, in which case minhag only works if you're dealing with mamonos matters. Right? Minhag, as far as who has the right to the first aliyah, is not going to override halacha. We have a minhag that we give Kohen Aliyah to somebody else. Too bad. Your minhag doesn't mean anything. That's the idea that the Ma'arik puts forth. Minhag works via Hefker Beisdin from that original Takana, and the Be'er Sheva has this as well in Source Beis, where he says, Yesh koch v'achachamim lafkia mamona de Hefker Beisdin Hefker. Okay. That's the first approach to how minhag would be operational in commercial agreements. The second approach, let me just pause. Questions on that? Other than the question of when they made this takana, which I can't answer? Okay. So the second approach is that participants enter agreements with the assumption that they're going to follow the local minhag. When I come up with an agreement with somebody, it's against the background of we're going to do business the way that people do business. So the Maharik, again, to the rescue here, presents this idea. He says, if you take a look at Source Gimel, he has a longer discussion here about minhag, and he says, when it comes to mamonos, when it comes to financial matters, you don't really need the rabbis to enact anything. I don't even need this takana that he just described in the tshuva in Siman Tes. He says, if you have popular agreement, then it doesn't matter. Everybody accepted it. Take a look at Source Gimel. He says, afilu inyan isura itmar de minhag mevatel halacha. Here he says, minhag overriding halacha could actually take place regarding isur. Yes, this sounds different from what he said in Tes. I'm not going over it now. The idavka inyan mamona is linan baser minhaga. He says, if it were specifically regarding mamon, regarding financial issues, that we follow minhag, hechi matzila meimar davka minhag vasikin chach meyamakom. He refers you to something which we're not going to discuss yet. We're going to come to a little bit later, which is that in Masechah Sofrim, we're told minhag is binding only if it is enacted by the sages of that location. The Vasikin. Vasikin doesn't really mean sages, but it does in this context. So he says, I don't understand. If you're only following minhag when it comes to financial matters, you shouldn't require rabbinic creation of that minhag. Any minhag should do. And he points you to a Gemara in Bava Kama, in which they tell you that we follow the minhag of wagon drivers. We follow the minhag of sailors. In the case that he brings specifically from Bava Kamma, there's a caravan traveling in the wilderness, and they get attacked by bandits, and they need to pay off the bandits, and the question is, who is supposed to pay, and how much are they supposed to pay? And the Gemara there says, we follow whatever the minhag is of the wagon drivers of the, there's some code that they have. It's built in. It's in the fine print in your agreement. When you hire the caravan, that this is what you're going to do. It's not really in the fine print, because then it wouldn't be a minhag issue, but you know what I'm saying. So he says, you're following chamarim besaponim. You're following wagon drivers and sailors. So that's not rabbinically enacted practice. That's just what people do. And he goes further, and he points to our Gemara. We talked about this, Rish Lakish brought the pasuk that tells us about what ours are supposed to be. And the Gemara asked, Rish Lakish, why did you need to tell me about ours based on a pasuk? Go see what the local minhag is. And the Gemara's answer was, well, we're talking about where it's a new community. We're talking about where people came from a variety of places, and therefore there's no established minhag. So he says, I don't understand. If you think minhagim need rabbinic enactment, if that's true that you need rabbinic enactment, then why didn't you give that as your answer in the Gemara? The answer is, where there was no rabbinically enacted minhag, that should have been your answer. So he says, the last line in Source Gimel, the last line is always the most important, he says, Elavadai pshita delo ala alev shum posek lomar deleinyan mamon yitztarech minhag vasikin. He says, when you're dealing with financial matters, no one ever thought you needed the rabbis to create and authorize the minhag. When you deal with financial matters, it's just the way we do things. Only regarding Isser do we say something different. So the Ma'arik says here that minhag works because people accept it. It was not imposed. It's just what you accept. And this idea is presented over a host of Rishonim. And we're just going to see a scattering of them. The Rambam, because you can't discuss anything without the Rambam. So if you take a look at Source Dalid from Hilchos Mechira, the Rambam is talking about defects in an object that is purchased. And he says, Kol she'hiskimu alav b'nei medina shehu mum. Anything which everybody, decides counts as a defect. My screen just went black. That's not good. Can you hear me? Nope. Okay, we're back. So again, what the Rambam says here is that if by popular agreement something is a defect, that is a defect. And if by popular agreement something is not a defect, then it's not a defect. Shekol hanose v'nose in stam al minhag ha-medina hu somech. Because anytime you engage in a transaction without specifying otherwise, the assumption is you are going with minhag. Ditto in source hey, the Rambam says the same thing regarding marriage and financial arrangements that surround marriage. The same rule is going to pertain, that you accept whatever the local practice is. So writes the Rambam. And the Vilna Gaon explains why. The Shulchan Aruch in Source Vav says what the Rambam said. In Eben Ezer Samach Vav, that for marriage purposes, all the agreements are based on the minhag. And if you look at the Bir Agro, which I brought you in Source Zion, and the title, if you can make me host again, that would be great. He says, "Detam de minhaga dechol de nasiv adaita de minhaga." He says the reason is because everybody who marries does so intending to follow the local minhag. That's the way that we do things. So the assumption is we are all accepting. And the Vilna Gaon traces it to the Rif. You can see the Rif in Yevamos in the beginning of Perek Zion. That's the idea. The Rashba says this as well. The Rashba has this great shuva, which I excerpted some of in Source Chess, where he goes through different types of minhagim and explains the basis for, or the mechanism of the of those minhagim. And he says here in Source Ches, Od Yesh Minhagin Shu No Sein Ve'Avo Pishal Eskimu Alav Lo Beis Din Agado V'Lo Afilu B'nei Amedina B'Mekomam. He says there are minhagim which are authoritative, even though they did not have some kind of Beis Din enact them. You didn't have a convocation of the community in order to approve them. Elishu Minaglasos Kain is just what people do. The Ein Adam Makbid Olav, and people are not Makbid against it. That's what we do in financial matters, and he says, I bolded it, Huminag Chazaki Ilu Hisnu Boba Feirush. That is a powerful minag, as though it had been explicitly created. So before this excerpt, he discussed officially created minhagim. He now shifts to talk about popular practice, which was not instituted by authorities, and he says, I support minhagim like that. And the Shulchan Aruch brings it, I brought you in Yud and in Yud Aleph, cases where the Shulchan Aruch specifically invokes this idea that we accept what we accept, and we're willing to accept Aiden from the community on communal matters, if that's what the community does. They're willing to accept their testimony and so on. It's everybody's agreement. The Sma in Source Yud Beis says again, like the Vilna Gaon did, Kol HaMekabel Stam Al Das HaNohug Mekabel. The assumption is that you are following whatever the community has established. And then finally, the Chazon Ish brings it in Source Yud Gimel as one way that minhag works. He has a couple of approaches, but one that he brings is Zeh Shenichnas L'Chatzer Zu Al Das HaMinhag Nichnas. Now, that leads me to one of the questions that Jeffrey had sent me early on in our discussions of minhag, which is, what if a minhag evolves in the non-Jewish community? Does that in fact have authority? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says yes and no. If you take a look at Source Yud Aleph first. Source Yud Aleph is a tshuva dealing with a tenancy issue. The case was that somebody was renting a place and completed his term, and now the landlord wants him out. However, the law, at least in the 1950s, in the place that he was addressing, was the tenant may choose to remain. If he says, I want to stay, he's allowed to stay. And the landlord is jumping up and down saying, but I want to live there. And the tenant says, well, too bad, I'm staying here. And the law empowers me to do so. So the question Ramosha is dealing with is, does that law have the authority to govern what we do if halachically you wouldn't be able to remain in it? Yes, I know the rules in Ontario are a little bit different. If the landlord wants to use it for himself, he's able to stay. I got that. That's not our discussion. So if you take a look at Source Yud Aleph, Rav Moshe says, even though this is established by the secular system and secular practice, it is binding for us, not because of Dina de Malchusa. That's not what he invokes here. He says, Ve'hatam, the part I bolded. First at the beginning, he says, Baru Pashut Shekol Elu Adina Matzluyim B'minaga Medina, .. He invokes our Gemara, of course. So he says, actually, you know what? Jump down to the third line. Let's do that also. He says, "Eino tzara shiyasa minag apichach meyatora v'gam aflo piyehudim davka." He says the minag does not have to be from the chachamim. The minag doesn't even have to be a Jewish one. The avshen higu zehanachrim, even though the non-Jews were the ones who did this, kagon shehem rov toshvei ha'ir, such as if they're the majority of the residents, nami humi din ha'torah v'stama kafi ha'minag. We treat this as the default minhag. He says, when you do this stam, when you enter your agreement without specifying one way or the other, it's as though you made a condition that this is like the minhag. Meaning that your agreement is going to follow the minhag. V'lachein in chiluk mi hem shenhigu da'avim hanochrim shem rov toshvei ha'ir hinhigu nidon b'din ha'tara b'stama k'haminhag. If you have a stam agreement, whatever they do is the norm. From that, I would have assumed, okay, local minhag means anybody. But then he modifies that, and just a few tshuvos later in Tshuva Ayin Vav there, in Source Tes Vav, there he's dealing with a school which wanted not to renew the contract of a teacher. The teacher is on a one-year deal which, by default, will renew at the end of the year, and they're not interested in renewing his agreement. They don't have a specific thing they can point to. It's not that they're firing him for cause, he did something terrible, he's not a good teacher. No, they just don't want to renew him. And his argument is that, halachically, you can't do that. And their argument in response is, but that's the way it works in the non-Jewish school system. So take a look at Reb Moshe, he says, in Tezvav. Hine below tayna klal ein yacholim lasalek. If you don't have a reason why he's not a good teacher, you can't remove him. Av shirotzim levat el zem itzadaminov, they say, look, since you renew the contract every year, that means he only had a one-year contract. So why should I have to rehire him now? But he says that doesn't mean anything. He says, you don't remove someone. You don't say, I'm not renewing you, unless you have cause. Granted that in the non-Jewish school system they do in fact drop people without cause. I don't think that's true with our teachers' unions today, certainly not in Ontario. Nonetheless, that's the reality he's dealing with. Ain't no klum. He says it doesn't matter, even if they do. He says you go with your makom. You don't go with the minhag hamedina. What does that mean, your makom? So he says it's possible for a Jewish community to establish its own minhag, which is different from the minhag of the larger non-Jewish community. So what Reb Moshe is saying is, if I am part of a 40,000 member Jewish community in a city of 2.something million people altogether, if the minhag in the Jewish community on a particular type of transaction is different from that of the larger non-Jewish community, the Jewish community minhag is in fact going to be binding. And then he takes you an even further leap, which I was very surprised by. He says, not only that, look at the last line. Ulevadzeh, aside from that, mehechatesi nema shegam bazeh yinagu kaminag batei sefer nachrim velo kaminag yisra ba yeshivos de mekomos acherim. He says, Jews can have a community that is across physical boundaries. So in other words, I'm not going to look at it based on what's done here, and I'm not going to look at it based on Toronto. I'm going to say, if the practice of yeshivos in general is to do X, that will be binding on our yeshiva more so than what the 2.something million people in Toronto are doing. He says, community is not geographically bounded. Now that comes up in other minhag discussions. This issue of whether you can define a minhag as being of a population that, let's say, originated in one place, or the Hasidim of a particular sect, or something along those lines. But this, to me, was very surprising. I thought that was that was really amazing. But it's very clear that that's what he says. So
far, you're dealing with examples of business, right?
Yes.
And there's another example of minhag, secular minhag, involving ether that he once gave. That was in that cosmetic surgery one where he talked about what a man can shave from body hair and things have changed over time.
Right. So I would say two things. First, we're still in the commercial agreement section. We haven't gone over to the Isser side of things yet, other than by alluding to it in some of the chuvos that we looked at. But we're still in the commercial ones. Popular agreement will not mean anything in terms of establishing minhag when it comes to Isser. We can't just say, you know, it's like when I was in high school and the teacher was late, and you'd look at each other in the classroom and say, if we all leave now, nobody gets in trouble. So you can't do that when it comes to halacha, right? You're not able to say, well, I guess if we all decide that we're not blowing shofar, then that's okay, because that's our minhag, is not to blow shofar. It doesn't work that way, although this year the first day of Rosh Hashanah is the Shabbos. But you follow what I'm saying. Minhag, by popular acclaim, won't work in the Isser province. But the other thing is that halacha is a case in which, by definition, that halacha relies on what people do. The definition of male grooming and female grooming is inherently about what people do. So, like, begadish, begadisha, like, that's built into the halacha. But going back to this, the Chazon Ish makes the point that this will apply not only to popular practice, of the non-Jewish community, but also to the law of the government, even when the law does not qualify as Dina de Malchusa. So take a look at Source Tazayin. He says, what he's been talking about there, which is not our discussion, is all where there's no minog. If there is a minog, you follow it. Don't worry about that. Kiminog amedina. V'chein, im yesh dina de malchusa, yesh lomar destama samchu kfi dina de malchusa. And he says, if there is a law that's around, we can assume they were going with it. Even where dina de malchusa is not dina. It's just this is the law of what they do locally. Nonetheless, he says, it will be binding because it's what people assume when they're engaged in a commercial agreement. Now, this leads to one more question. Yes, Ezra.
Wouldn't that be most likely to be the minhag anyways if it's Dina de Malchusa?
So that can well be, yes. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. The case that he's dealing with, if I remember correctly, was in Israel, and within the view that the Israeli government legislation does not have the power of Dina de Malchusa Dina. So you could then have a case in which people actually don't follow it. And it doesn't have Dina de Malchusa Dina.
Even according to him. Okay.
Yeah. So, sure. This leads, though, to one other question, which is, so what if people don't know? Right? What if people are not aware of what the minhag is? If you're telling me it's based on popular acceptance, what if the parties to this particular deal were not aware? One way you could look at it is to say that each party in this must agree to whatever the relevant local practices are. The other way to look at it, though, is to say, no, when I enter an agreement, it's with the understanding that I'm going to follow whatever local minhag is. I don't necessarily know what it is, but when someone tells me what it is, I'm going to follow it. You know? Like Kabbalah's mitzvos for a ger. Right? We don't assume that when a person converts to Judaism, they know all the mitzvos that they are accepting. What we say to them is, do you accept that whatever is a mitzvah, you're going to do? Do you accept that whatever is an avera, you're going to stay away from? And then, as they discover, you know, what it is, they say, okay, yes, I'll do this, or no, I won't do that. But it's not that they know 100% of everything, and that they're having that in mind when they're standing there in the mikvah. So,
can I just say that? Yeah. This is what, you know, with Hebrew, everything we learned the entire year's mind, both the workers and the shomrim and everything, nobody knows that. The average person doesn't know, but they're going to know what the halakha actually is.
So they're accepting whatever the halacha is telling them. The problem is that here the halacha is determined by whatever the local practice is. So we're flipping it back.
It's the same idea, though. They don't know what the heaven is. They don't know what the halacha is, but they know whichever realm we're going with.
Right. Okay, so if that's operating by popular acclaim, then yes. The Rambam seems to say that doesn't work. The Rambam seems to say that the participants need to know about each minhag that is binding them, and if they don't know, it is not binding. That seems to be what the Rambam is saying. Go back to what we read in Hilchos Ishus, back in source number 5, source A, right? The Rambam's ending. He said, after he said, minhag is ikar gadol and all that, it has to be everywhere in the land. Why should it have to be something that's everywhere in the land? So you could look at it and say, he just means that shows that it's binding everywhere. But some look at that and say, no, what the Rambam is trying to say is that everybody has to know about it. And take a look now back where we were in the source sheet at source Yud Zayin, at the wording of the Rama. Ve'eino karoi minag eladavar hashchiach v'nasa harbe pa'amin. It only becomes a minag if it's something common and that it's done many times. Avaldavar sheino nasa rak pam'achas o shnei pa'amin. If it's only done once or twice, eino karoi minag. Now, he doesn't tell me what happens between two and many. Or is three many. That's very unclear, and I've seen Poskim who seem to think that three is many, and I've seen Poskim who seem to think that there's something in between. But he's quoting the Rivash here, and the Shach tells you to look at Helcha Shchita for the basis of the Rama in Source Yuches. Technically, if you're looking at some editions of the Shach, he says to look at Helchos Machalos Asuros, but he means Helcha Shchita. Take a look at Source Yuches. The Rambam talks about a case in which shechita happens and then parts of the body of the animal that are supposed to be inspected disappear. So the Rambam writes, Mishachar es behema bakara es habeta and vekodim sheyivdo kesareya bakela vo'akuv v'nata lesareya v'halachlo. What happens if he shechted the animal and then before you could check the lungs, along came a dog and it ran away with it. Somebody came by, took the lungs. Now you can't see them. Harezim muterest, the animal's mutter. And just like he goes on to say, he deals not just with the lungs, he deals with the brain also. He says, just like we're not concerned that there might be a hole in the membrane of the brain and there's something damaged to the spine, so too, if the lung is lost and you can't inspect it, we're not worried about that either. And then he says, the word in brackets, I added. He says, "V'ein b'ze minhag." There is no such thing as a minhag on this. Meaning to say, you know, where we live, if the lungs disappear, we don't eat that food. We don't eat from that animal. He says, "There's no such thing." Why? Shedavar she'eno matsui ein bo minhag. If it's not common, he doesn't mean the lungs. Eino matsui. He means the minhag. If something doesn't happen frequently, that's not a, it doesn't establish a minhag. So what emerges from this, if it needs to be frequent, if it needs to be something that is spread everywhere, you can make the argument that what we're trying to say here is, the parties have to know. And in fact, the Shach says that. If you take a look at Source Yates, I brought you one example that comes up in the Shach also in Mem Beis Lamed Vav. He says, he's talking about a case in which they normally write into the shtar that the shomer or whoever it is going to be naman, is going to be credible to testify regarding what he's done. And he says, even though they normally write it into the document, they have to say so. Why? I added in bold, I bolded it. The Dilma lo haisa daito lichtov ne'amanus. Because no. Maybe he didn't intend to include that in this agreement. V'hainu kishe'en yadua shalove yada shenoagin lichtov ne'amanus b'chol hashtaros. We're talking about a case in which it is not known whether the borrower knew that they normally write it in. And since he didn't know, he couldn't have accepted it for himself. Based on what we've just said, based in the Rambam, in that read of the Rambam, based in the Rama, based in the Shach, it sounds like you have to actually be aware of the minhag to be held accountable. So go back to our case with the Balabayas. What if he says, instead of arguing, I paid you more because I thought that it would get you to work longer hours, where I come from, right, like we saw those cases, right, I'm from this place, I'm from that place, where they work longer hours, I went to Tveria, whatever, you could say, where I come from, they work longer hours, that's what I thought I was getting. I didn't know about the local minhag. He may be able to get out of it. However, some put limitations on the need-to-know requirement. So, Rabbi Tzal Stern in the Betzel HaChochma, in Source Chaf, puts a limitation on it. He says, if the minhag is not against halacha, it will apply whether you know about it or not. That's his idea. Which makes sense. Our whole discussion is about minhag mevatel halacha. If the minhag isn't mevata halacha, it's just what everybody does, and there's no reason not to do it, then okay, then follow it. Even if you knew about it or didn't know about it, doesn't make a difference. That's one distinction. I'm just going to go with the Pesach Choshen for a second, Rosami, and then I'll take you. The Pesach Choshen says something bigger in Source Chaf Aleph. Look at this. He says, "V'nirish bedine mamanos ubefrat bedine schirus." He says, when you're dealing with financial issues, commercial issues, and especially if you're dealing with employer-employee relations, shamu halachachar minog, what we say, you follow the minog. Hu mishum shemistama al das minagamakam osim. That's because we assume that we're working with minag hamakom. We assume they're working with the local practice. V'lachein kishein minag shchiach lo shach lo markein. If the minag is not common, then you can't apply it. V'av He says, even though we say that minog is binding when you don't know about it, that's because mistama we rely on the minog. But if it's not common, then you don't say that. So the Pesach Choshen just throws in there along the way. It isn't even his main point. He says, if the guy doesn't know the minog, he's not bound by it. Just like that. That's not even his point. His discussion is an uncommon minog, and along the way he says, a minog is binding, even if they don't know about it. That's what he says. And as far as the Ramah, what do you do with the Ramah who said it has to be done many times? He says, that's talking about a new minog becoming established. It's not talking about an existing minog. Yes, Rav Sammy.
I think what the Pesach Choshen is saying, and this is how I understood it, is that the point that the Rav Ash was originally making is that people generally follow the minhag, but if they don't know there is such a minhag about this type of thing, then you can't assume that, right? The point is that people don't rehire chazonim, that's his case, right? Do you have to rehire the chazon or something like that?
Right.
Who says there's such a minhag about the way you hire chazon? People don't know there's such a minhag about such an uncommon thing.
Right.
If there is a minhag which happens frequently, everybody knows there is a minhag, even if they don't know what that minhag is.
Uh-huh.
That's the best of the Zohar. I mean, going back to our Gemara, right? Like, I think to your point where you said, well, where I come from, people work long hours, the response would be, well, yeah, but you came here. You knew there was a minhag here about workers do. You might not know that that minhag was different than your previous minhag. Right? And when the Gemara says, well, let's look what people do otherwise, it'd be very hard to say that. It could really be dependent upon, you know, whether you knew about the minhag.
Right, no, but I don't think that's disagreeing with what we've been saying. Meaning, I think you're right. I think that that's his point when he says, Mistama Somech Al HaMinhag.
Right.
But I thought that what the others were saying, what the Rambam was saying, and what we were getting, you know, from all those others we brought, including especially that Shach, is that even though he knows there is a Minhag, if he doesn't know what that Minhag is, he's not bound.
Right, so the Shach is saying that. I'm not sure the Rambam is...
Right, like I said, you could read the Rambam differently. The Shach for sure thinks so.
Yeah.
So that's just what's so shocking here. Right. Okay. Last point on these commercial minhagim. Realize that these commercial minhagim may be binding, even if there's no Hefker Beis Din, to go with the first approach, and even if the participant doesn't know about the minhag, because of what we're about to say in the other category about general non-commercial minhagim, that there are ways in which those become binding, that will apply to the commercial ones also. So in other words, well, I'll blow the secret, we're going to talk about the possibility that communal acceptance renders something a binding minhag, even in non-commercial matters. We'll have to talk about that and what that means, but that's what we're going to say. So that may cause the commercial minhag to be binding, even without the Hefker Beis Din mechanism, and even without the part, you know, participant saying, "Well, we knew what it was going in." So Rabbi Kiva Eger says that explicitly in Source Chav Beis when he talks about this issue of commercial minhag and the Ramah saying only if you haven't seen it happen multiple times. But then he says, where it is known that it was established by the Vasikin, who we're going to be talking about, these great rabbis, where we know that they established it, even if it only happens once every 50 years, you can call it minug. So, first of all, you see the ancient pedigree of the line once in a yovel. Rabbi Kiva Eger uses it here. But number two, what you see is that the mechanism for minhagim in general will also apply to the commercial ones. That's the idea. So looking at the review questions that I gave you here, question number seven, why does minhag hold sway in commercial agreements within Rabbi Yonason's view of minhag and bata halacha? Either it's Hefker Beis Din, or it is popular acclaim. And then question eight, not popular acclaim, acclaim of those participants. Will minhag hold sway if the minhag of the Jewish and non-Jewish populations differ? Rav Moshe seems to say no. And what if one of the participants was unaware of the minhag? The Shach seems to say one thing. It seems to say that it's not binding. But the Pesach Choshen here is saying that it could well be binding. Okay. So now let's get to the general minhag. And Natal, did you have a question, or you have a question, or are you good? Okay. So, general issues. And as I said in my introductory email, we're not going to get through everything here. I will end up needing to record an addendum and sending out a link, but we should get to a good amount of it. So an example of a case of minhag that's not a commercial agreement between parties, altering Seder HaYerusha, altering the order of inheritance, deciding that our minhag here is that the Bechor gets the same as everybody else. Our minhag here is boys and girls all get the same. Something along those lines. So two approaches, two main approaches, and then, like I said, a sort of 2B approach. The first approach is, minhagim are binding if the majority of the community approves them on a minhag by minhag basis. Meaning not blanket, everybody does it. Not the community having a meeting and saying, okay, from now on, all minhagim are binding. But this minhag is binding, all in favor say aye. This we get in the Trumas Hadesh, which I mentioned to you last time, in source Chav Gimel. Tzibur Huto Aleim Mas. There's a tax on the community. The deal is that they make an arrangement that everybody will file a form that indicates everything they have and swear they're not lying, and then they're going to appoint somebody whose job is going to be to say, okay, you pay X amount towards the communal tax, you pay Y amount, that's the way it's going to work. So the question is, does this fit with Din Torah? What about the minhagim that exists already in the communities? So as the Trumas Hadeshen deals with this, he said, well, you know what, let's go through it. I think it's actually worth seeing the Trumas Hadeshen's language here. He says, he says, this is more dependent on minhag than it is on halacha. He says, this early Rishon said, all matters of communal taxes are about minhag. V'chein b'Mordechai, and the Mordechai has it as well, from, I think it's Rav Avram Kohen Tzedek, maybe it's Rav Aaron Kohen Tzedek, I don't know, regarding the mas, that it's that minhag mevatel halacha v'din chachmei ha-Talmud. Minhag will override halacha, minhag will override what they said in the Gemara. Av opi shematzel esmach min ha-mikra, even if you have psukim that seem to support it, that seem to support the standing practice before the minhag. Because of Nami, or not, that seems to oppose the minhag, put it that way. Because of Nami, the Lavdavka minhag chachamim, alafilu minhag chamarim v'saponim yeshlis mochaleim, not only the minhag chachamim, but the minhag of the wagon drivers, like we talked about in the case in Bava Kama. Vinira. The Alpha got the Kasim Rabbeinu Tam, Vachiach Mamash Nasisim de Baba Basra, the Yeshminagim Shal Shtus, Shein Lismoch Alayhu, granted that Rabbeinu Tam famously says, there are minhagim that are just a joke, that you should not be relying on, we may come back to that later. Uba Arzerua Kasim Nami, the Lamrina, Minag Bavat Allah, Halim Kin, Mipi Chachamim, and the Arzerua says, the only minag that will override Allah is if it comes from the Chachamim, and we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Nonetheless, jump to where I bolded. Mikom makom nira lomar de beinyane misim v'chiyagavna kulu modu da azlinan basar minhagam de b'nei ha'ir o b'nei ha'medina shnagu bo mikedem. He says, nonetheless, it appears that regarding taxes and the like, everybody agrees we follow the minhag of the people of the town or the b'nei ha'medina shnagu bo mikedem, whatever they have been doing all along. Afilu ilohu fabi chachamim, even if it did not come from chachamim. Why? Jump to the bold at the end. The imatzrachta lohu lemezel baser din Torah b'chol davar laolam tehei meriva b'neihem. He says, because otherwise you're going to start fights. The community needs to have the ability to just follow the minhag. Mishamachi meikara machlu adadi levater al din Torah v'gamri umakni lemezel baser seder minhagidhu. So they all agree we are following our minhag. Now, just based on the Trumas Hadeshen, I don't know whether they needed to approve each practice, or whether you're just saying this works this way by default. He hasn't said that you have to approve each practice yet. That we're getting to. Also note, as stated in the Trumas Hadeshen, that either way, it's only going to work for communal matters. It's not going to work for personal interactions that don't affect public peace. It's specifically to the matters that would disrupt the public peace if you didn't go with the minhag. That's important to note. But here are the two different approaches we could take. You could say, like what we said regarding commercial agreements a few minutes ago, that we automatically assume everyone is okay with what everyone is doing. And that's it. It's not about this minhag was approved. It's about an assumption of universal agreement without anything done to formalize it. However, the Chazon Ish wants an active decision by the community. Take a look, please, at source Chav Dalet. Ubeinyane misim b'kayotzebo, taxes and the like, shekoven minok de limnoas hamachlokes. Nirad yesh kalach berov hatzibur lachof es hamuat. The majority of the community can compel the minority. Like a case of migdar milsa gezeros, which we're not going into right now. And he quotes you the Trumas Hadeshen. So, if you're talking about the majority compelling the minority, now it means there was intent. There had to be a decision made in which 70 people said we're doing this and 30 people said we're doing that, and the 70 told the 30, too bad. Get more votes next time. But that's the way the Chazon Ish seems to formulate it. It has to be a decision. And there are Rishonim who seem to assume, like the Chazon Ish, that we mean active agreement. Take a look at source Chav Hei, please. Sheila. Reuven Rainu Shahor Rabenu Shematana Luchud Imbat Nai Shetigma Mechayim Nigbeis Mechayim Elemi Aminagamakam Shalag Bosa. You know what? I'm not going into the Matana case. We're running out of time. He talks about a specific case of Minog and he says, Tshuva, Ikar Haminog Shaosin Alpiv Vahusha Rov Hakal Yisyatu Imzikne Hakal Vietaknu Takana Kamashi Yitaknu Vikaimu Osa Zewa Minog. He says, Minog works when the majority of the community takes counsel with the elders of the community and they make a takana. That's the Rif's framing of it. You also have it in the Tshuva of Rabbeinu Tam writing to the Ri, found in the Tshuva's Maimonios in Nashim Yitzayin, which I brought you in Chavav. We talked about the Bnei Ha'ir being Mekayim Bechever Ir, with the community all together. Ditto in the Rush. The Rush is actually a bit of a problem. The Rush has an apparent contradiction regarding accepting minhagim that oppose a halachic norm. In Source Chav Zayin, he tells you, he's dealing there with a case of a husband who claims that his deceased wife wrote the nedunya over to him, which local minhag allows her to do, so that when she dies, the nedunya, the dowry, goes to him instead of, not dowry, but the nedunya goes to him, as opposed to what it should do, which is go to her yershim. It should go to her heirs. He says, well, local minhag allows her to write this. And the Rush rejects it. And I'm going to sum it up in the interests of time, but you can see it, especially if you look at what I bolded there. He says, no. We follow minhag only if halacha is rofefes. And that's from a source which we're going to see. We haven't seen that yet. There's a lack of clarity about whom to follow. Then we'll follow the minhag. But not if it opposes halacha. If it opposes halacha, then no. The only way that you could get away with this, if it opposes halacha, like in this Yerusha case, is if either halacha is rofefes, we're not sure what the halacha is, or if you have hefker beisdin, which comes out of a takana. But your stam minhag is not going to override halacha, in this case, Yerusha. That's what the Rush says in Source Chav Zayin. He says, look, if you just look at the third bold line that I have there, I don't know how you get to give one person's money to somebody else just based on a minhag. He says, who are you kidding? There's no way. But then, in Source Chav Ches, he has a separate tshuva. It's dealing with a case in which there's a loan document that says that the loan can be claimed not only from normal encumberable property, but even from movable items. The loan can be claimed even out of movable items. So he says, if that's true, but the local minhag is that nobody actually does it. Nobody actually collects movable items for the debt. Then we don't honor the document. We follow the minhag instead. the local minhag is you don't collect the movables. I don't care if your document says you do. Are we clear on that case? We went back and forth a little bit. The halacha is you shouldn't be able to encumber movable items. They have a practice that they write in the document at the time of a loan, it can be claimed even out of movable items. But nobody actually does that. Nobody claims the debt out of movables. So he says, minhag wins. So I don't understand. The Mizrahi asks the question, which I excerpted here in Source Chavtes. It's a hard to read Mizrahi. It's very long. But the Mizrahi says, I don't understand. In Source Chav Zayin, the position of the Rosh is that that minhag is not strong enough to be mafkir somebody's money and give it to somebody else. You need a takana for that. But here he seems to be willing to follow the minhag and to disempower the shtar that was written. So the Mizrahi's solution to this problem is to say the minhag empowering the wife to write away her property was in violation of a takana made in Toledo by Chachamim, by great Chachamim, that said that her heirs could claim half of the nedunya. So that likely wouldn't have come from Chachamim. Chachamim would not have written that. That's what he says. So if it's not from Chachamim, it's not powerful. Whereas the minhag of we don't collect movable items likely came from Chachamim, because it makes sense. If you're going to allow people to come and claim a debt out of movable items, no one's going to sell any or buy anything anymore. Right? Every time I want to buy a water bottle, I have to do a title search and make sure someone isn't going to claim the water bottle from me. That's nonsense. So it makes sense to say we don't actually collect movables, therefore traces to the Chachamim. That's the way the Mizrahi reads the Rush on this, what you would need here is not just the community does this. You need community plus Chachamim. The truth is, I shouldn't have brought this here. The more I think about it, the more I think I should have brought this further along in this year. I apologize. It'll make more sense later on. But that's the idea that the Mizrahi reads into the Rush. I also have some problems. I don't see how the Rush in Chav Zayin actually supports that. But nonetheless, going back to where we were, which is we're trying to say that on general issues, minhag is binding if the community approves it, and it seems, as the Chazon Ish suggested, and we saw it in the Rif, and we saw it in Rabbeinu Tam, they actually have to agree on this specific thing. The Ramban also says this. If you take a look at the Ramban of Bava Basra in Source Lamed, when he talks about the ways in which minhag might work, it's Ramban at the end of Bava, towards the end of Bava Basra, and he brings you a couple of approaches, but we're focusing on his second approach, because that's the one that he says is right. He says, "V'ika de amri kamrinan minhaga milsehi kigon shehisnu alav anshei ha'ir o shiva tuve ha'ir b'ma'amadan." He says, minhag requires that the population or its representatives, the tuve ha'ir, meet and declare this minhag binding. The other ones only work in the event that halacha is rofefes, is weak. What does that mean? The Yerushalmi is the source for it in Source Lamed Aleph, where the Yerushalmi says, quoting Reish Lakish, "Lo sof davar halacha zu, ela kol halacha shi rofefes bebeizdin ve'in ata yodea mativa, tsei urei matzibur nohog." He says, if you don't know what the right answer is in the halacha is loose, it's not firm, we don't know what the halacha is, so what you need to do is go see what the community does. Why, what the community does? So in Source Lamed Beis, I brought you from the Alei Tamar, that that it's not that the community is poskening. Let's see what he says. It's not that we're asking the tzibur to paskin what Bezin doesn't know. They must have a tradition that Bezin simply forgot, and he refers you to the halacha that comes up this year. Shabbos Erev Pesach is happening this year. So the question is, how do we shech the Korban Pesach? How do you get your knife to the Beis HaMikdash? So there, the answer was, go see what people do. So the Ramban says that communal minhag is only binding if There is no established halacha. It's a case of rofefes, or the community actually does, by popular acclaim, they say, this is what we're going to do on this minog. And you see it in the tshuva of the Ramban as well, in Lamed Gimel. Hisnu alav mitchila. They had to have actually made a t'nai. Are we clear? I've just been monologuing a lot. Yeah? Okay. So that's the position of Ramban. We also see it in the Rivash, which Rav Sammy and I were discussing yesterday. I just look at the part I bolded here. Halacha brura ein minog stam bevatla ela minog shehisnu alav b'nei ha'ir. You actually needed them to explicitly accept it. Popular practice only works if there's no prevailing halacha. And this seems to be at work in the Shulchan Aruch as well, in Choshen Mishpat Lamed Zayin and Chav Beis, as explained by the Pesachei Tshuva, but I'm going to skip it in the interest of getting to discuss the second one for a few minutes. So you can see it in Lamed Hei Lamed Vav. The other approach is to say, minhagim are binding if the chachamim of the community approve them on a minhag by minhag basis. If you take a look at Source Lamed Zayin from Maseches Sofrim, that's the source for this Vasikin thing. He says, "Vezesh sha'amru minag mevatal halacha minag Vasikin." When we say minag of a right halacha, that's only if it's minag Vasikin. And minag Vasikin is universally understood to mean that the ancient rabbis of the community established it. So brings the Or Zeruah in Lamed Ches. It has to be minag kavua al pi chachmei hamakom. It was established by the chachamim of that location. Source Lamed Tes, the Mordechai brings that Or Zeruah as halacha as well. The Ma'arik in Shuvah Ches also brings it. It's got to be from the Chachamim. Now, the truth of the matter is that I think you have to blend approaches 1 and 2, and this is my 2B. Because I have a problem. The Rif mentioned communal support, but he also mentioned elders. I think what's really going on here is the Chachamim are the Iker. If it is communal, then the Chachamim must have approved it. If the community accepts it, it must be that the Chachamim were on board with it. Take a look at Source Mem, the Ma'arik Nundalit. He says, "Ve'ein lecha minog al pi vasikin gadol mizeh shenase berabim mikadem kadmasa lefnei gedolei olam." He says, there's no greater minog vasikin, like Sofrim wanted, than a minog in which they've been doing it forever in front of the gedolei olam. They were aware of it. They didn't protest. That's good enough. In which case, communal acceptance only works because the Chachamim approved it, and that's what you see in the Ramah. The Ramah in a tshuva in Source Mem Aleph. Ein lomar sheminog zelonas al pi vasikin. Don't say this minog didn't come from the vasikin. And after all, he says, the Yushalmi, he means Sofrim, requires vasikin. Don't tell me that, because look at the Ma'arik. The Ma'arik says, if something was done for such a long time, clearly it's got to be minog vasikin. That really matters. I ask you for 2 minutes for this. It's only 11:28. The application of saying that a popular minhag that's in practice for a long time must have chachamim buy-in, that applies, and that's important regarding the minhag garua, regarding a bad minhag. If you take a look at Source Membeis, you see that Tosfos. Tosfos talks about the case in Bava Basra. Well, long story short, the opening mission in Bava Basra talks about the materials needed for walls. If you have two partners who own parts of a yard, and the wall between them collapses, and now they want to rebuild it, and one of them says, "I want to rebuild it with this material. How wide does it have to be? Depends on the material, which material is good." And Tosfos says that when the Mishnah gives me the sort of basic type of building material, Hutza V'dafna, it's showing me that you're not allowed to do anything less than that material. And if they want to, if one of the partners says, "Well, the local minug is to use a lesser material," minug hedyot hu. And when he says minug hedyot hu, it's not a compliment. He's saying that is what we call in other contexts minug gorua. That's no good as a minug. So I would challenge this Tosfos and say, if popular acclaim works, who cares whether it's a good minug or a bad minug? It's the minug. But Tosus' point is that popular acclaim demonstrates that the Vasikin were okay with it. That's the whole point. Like the Mordechai, which we saw earlier, which I skipped, who quoted the Or Zeruah. He also did that. He quoted the Or Zeruah to require Chachamim, and he said that's to exclude the Minhag Geruah. And you see it in the Marachash, in Source Mem Gimel. The Marachash, who's fascinating in his own right, in his Tshuvos Taras Chaim, deals with a minhag of equating sons and daughters and in inheritance. Leave aside your feelings about how inheritance should be handled. It's a good discussion for another time, but look what he says. U'mikomakom yeroed, d'chol shu muzgar b'mishnu v'talmud d'lo tzarech l'vasikin, avol b'sh'ar minhagim she'ena muzgarim b'talmud hu d'ba'ina minhag vasikin. He says, minhagim that make it into the Gemara don't need vasikin to establish them. They got Vasikin. That which is not in the Gemara needs Vasikin. That's what the Mordechai was referring to when he said there are some inferior minhagim. Perush. He says, I need Chachamim to stamp a minhag, because otherwise I'm going to say it wasn't in the Gemara. It could be one of the Garua ones. It could be one of the no good ones. The point of the Chachamim is to say this isn't Garua. So what that means is this. When you're dealing with broader minhagim, beyond just a commercial agreement between two parties, in order for it to be binding, you need communal acceptance which will demonstrate that it came from the Chachamim, or you just need the Chachamim themselves. But the real anchor, the driver, is the Chachamim, not the community. Which takes me to the last two of our questions. Why does minhag hold sway in general? This is the second answer, right? Is that the, oh, you know what? That's the same thing I did in number 7. I didn't need that question. I could have an even 10 questions. Makes it easier to grade. But if the community accepts a minhag but is clearly wrongheaded, is it binding? The answer is no. Because they don't have a Chachamim on board. The real driver for the Minhag has to be the Chachamim having accepted it, and the community is just a simon. It's a sign that the community had accepted it. You follow? We good? I realize I raced through a lot of this. If you saw these in advance, obviously it would have been a lot more clear. Except for those who did, I hope that worked. But now I don't need to record an addendum, so that's really nice. So thank you very, very much. I've enjoyed Bav Metzia this year more than I expected. And next year, for those who don't know, we're doing Shviyas, God willing. So that'll be a lot of fun. Rav Sammy is...